Today on Straight Talk Africa, Rwandans go to the polls August 4th. But President Paul Kagame, running for a third term, says victory was assured when Rwandans amended the constitution by parliamentary referendum in 2015, allowing him to stay in power until 2034. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ian Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the upcoming Rwandan presidential election.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame has brought much-needed stability and peace to Rwanda following the 1994 genocide, including improvements in healthcare, education, infrastructure, and other sectors. But critics say his human rights record is blemished, and some political observers and voters have expressed displeasure with the way the upcoming election in August is being conducted. My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more. But we warn that some images may be difficult to watch.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame rose to power in 1994 at the head of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, a rebel group that put an end to the genocide. He defeated Rwanda's murderous government, which had been responsible for killing approximately 800,000 ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus. The genocide was one of the worst mass slaughters of the past century. The background is complex. At that time, most Rwandans were poor farmers and livestock keepers. Rwanda's colonial and post-colonial history had deepened ethnic tensions between the majority Hutu ethnic community and the minority Tutsis. Many Tutsis had fled violence in the late 1950s, and 35 years later in the 1990s. When these Tutsis said they wanted to return to Rwanda, Rwanda's Hutu-led government said they were not welcome. That's when the Tutsi-led Rwandan Patriotic Front rebel group was formed to fight for their right to return home. Eventually, successful peace negotiations made progress toward a power-sharing deal between the Hutus and the Tutsis. But everything was derailed on April 6, 1994, when the Rwandan president's plane was shot down near Kigali Airport, killing him and the president of neighboring Burundi. The unexpected violent act reignited ethnic tensions in the region, sparking the genocide. Controversy still surrounds the downing of the plane, which resulted in the deaths of Rwandan and Burundian presidents. Did the RPF rebels bring down the airplane, or were extremists in Habyarima's own government to blame? Over the next 90 days, 800,000 were killed by Hutu extremists. The incumbent Hutu regime was forced out of power in July 1994 by the Rwandan Patriotic Front, or RPF, led by Paul Kagame. As vice president, Kagame controlled the national army, maintaining law and order, while, with others, rebuilding Rwanda. He also publicly prohibited retribution killings and organized the local Gagaka court system to provide justice and to heal and reconcile communities of Tutsis and Hutus. As president, Kagame has prioritized national development, pursuing a mostly successful program aimed at developing Rwanda and making it a so-called middle-income country by 2020. Key indicators, including health care and education, have improved significantly under his watch, and Rwanda has mostly maintained good relations with the East African community and the United States during his tenure. In recent years, human rights groups accused President Kagame of political repression. He handily won a national election in 2003 under a new constitution adopted that year and was reelected for a second term in 2010. In 2015, more than 4 million Rwandans petitioned parliament, changing the constitution again, allowing him to run for another term this year, 2017. The United States, generally a key Rwandan ally, opposed the 2015 term limit change. Kagame has repeatedly accused some Western governments of meddling in his country's internal affairs. Earlier this month, the Rwandan government disqualified all but three candidates for the upcoming re-election vote. Critics cried foul. Amnesty International says Rwanda needs serious political reforms. The East African nation has seen two decades of attacks on political opponents, journalists, and rights activists. The two challengers to President Kagame in the August 4 poll are Frank Habineza of the opposition Democratic Green Party and independent candidate Philippe Mpemana. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studio is one distinguished guest, Etienne Karechezi, chief of the VOA Central Africa Service. Etienne, frankly, I have to say that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
It's an honor to be here, Shaka. Thank you so much for the invitation.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And joining us, of course, from the United Kingdom is Claude Rutsinzi, a former chairperson of the ruling Rwandese Patriotic Front in the United Kingdom. And he joins us via Skype from Britain. Well, Claude Rutsinzi, it's a pleasure to have you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
My pleasure, Shaka. Thanks for inviting me, and I appreciate the work you're doing over there.
You're most welcome, Ndugu. And last but not least, Lieutenant General Kayumba Nyamwasa, former Chief of Staff of the Rwandan Army and Rwandan Ambassador to India. He joins us via telephone link up from Johannesburg in South Africa. Thank you so much for joining us. For the first time, frankly, on Straight Talk Africa, General Kayumba Nyamwasa.
Thank you, Shaka. It is my pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you.
A programming note. Diana Shima Rwigara, the only female presidential aspirant who was disqualified by Rwanda National Electoral Commission, had agreed to participate in today's show. But due to reasons beyond our control, we have not been able to access her. We shall try to reach her throughout the show via telephone so that she can make a contribution. We also tried unsuccessfully by telephone to reach Charles Munyaneza, the Executive Secretary of the National Electoral Commission of Rwanda. But anyway, later in the program, we will give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The US country code is 1. Let me come to you, Etienne. First of all, I have to be honest with you. Doing a Rwandan show is not journalistically very easy.
It's not very easy, Shaka, as you attest it, especially from a distance, like from Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I've been covering Rwanda for quite some time. So I would say 2 decades and more. But if you have to cover Rwanda, really one of the most challenging experiences you can have is to be able to access your sources, mm-hmm. especially the information holders, be they from senior high government officials, human rights activists, opposition leaders, and even some of the little folks, just regular people who can provide you the information of what you need, what's going on, what happened, any comments or anything. So it's been a challenge, especially if you have to call, continue to call, and sometimes you end up not getting anything of what you wanted.
Would you consider those challenges perhaps unique compared to and contrasting to covering other countries on the African continent?
Unique, yes, again, as Rwanda defines itself for the last 20 years plus, it's a unique experience as Rwanda, it's a country, but also a unique experience as Rwandans. But also in terms of coverage, Rwanda wants to be unique. You have some regional or international standards you have to follow for some other countries, but Rwanda wants to define itself as unique. I'm talking about this because whenever I want to access any Rwandan sources, especially government officials, sometimes they don't have much to say. It seems they don't really possess the information you're looking for, and therefore it's very hard for you to get it, to extract the relevant information you would like to broadcast or to use for your programs. And sometimes also, of course, phones may be not going through. You may end up not able to get to your phone.
But when they come on the program, are they free to talk, or do they sound like they are probably reading from a script?
Script in Rwanda is what they call like it's a narrative. What kind of narrative are you trying to bring out or trying to tell? Mm. What kind of story do you have to tell? So people have learned that through experience, throughout this every day, that there is some way to tell the Rwandan story. That's a narrative. It can be the narrative of the Rwandan government itself, but especially the narrative from the Rwandan ruling party, the Rwandese ruling party, the Rwandese Patriotic Front, RPF. This, if you go back to Rwandan history, Shaka, you know better than I do probably, or you have better information. Since 1994, when the genocide ended, there is a way Rwandans, especially the government and the ruling party, want to define themselves. How do you look at Rwanda? It has to be unique. Especially the rulers, they say, we stopped the genocide. We have much to say in our own unique way.
Mm.
That's one of the challenges, experience you have to go through. Even when you have to extract any kind of information from a Rwandan official, again, be it a party ruler, a government official, or another person you want to talk to.
What about a presidential election that in fact we are talking about? We are having a presidential election in Rwanda on August 4th. And yet, when you look at the pictures coming out of Rwanda, look at the optics. You look at mammoth rallies, for example, addressed by incumbent president, Major General Paul Kagame, retired, but certainly not tired.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you also look at the people who come from the opposition, we're talking about Frank Habineza, a candidate for the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, and Philip Mpayimana, you don't see anybody.
You don't see anybody, but you see people. Again, you look at the three presidential candidates. You take like President Paul Kagame, who is the chairman of the ruling party, the Rwandese Patriotic Front. You take Frank Habineza, as you said, who is the chairman of the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, and the independent candidate, Philippe Mpayimana. If you take those two candidates, newly basic in Rwandan politics, and you pull them with Kagame, who is in Rwanda, and Rwanda, by Rwandan and regional standards, he's a political giant.
Right.
If you put them on a standby and say, vote, of course, the choice is very clear, especially given the time these candidates have been given to campaign, to present their policies, to explain what they want to do for the people, you may say, some observers say, or some critics, especially opposition leaders, say it's not enough time for anybody to make their policies well known.
We're talking about 3 weeks, basically, really, campaigning, correct?
Yeah, 3 weeks. And if you look at the very first days, basically, each one of those candidates were basically attracting somehow like a few dozens, sometimes less than 100. So you could imagine. And sometimes we had our reporters talking to different people in Rwanda. They would ask if they know the candidates, and some people would say, we have no clue. There's
no
just
clue.
One candidate, that's the only person we know we'll be voting for on August 4th.
Because they do not appear on television, perhaps, in newspapers, or have airtime on radio stations.
Yeah, that may be one reason, but also especially if you look at the whole Rwandan political infrastructure and landscape. Again, compared to Kagame, these two candidates really, they don't present any kind of weight.
So basically, really, when we talk about the political playing field, as we talk about elections, it is not leveled.
It cannot be leveled again.
I see.
If you look at Rwanda, especially with Kagame being the flag bearer of the ruling party, the Rwandese Patriotic Front, these two countries seem to be just coming from maybe a few kilometers back behind him.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Shaka.
Well, before we pause for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and watch our show live. And don't forget to share it with your friends. Also, we are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Rwanda Election. We'll put some of your tweets on air later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Claude Rutsinzi, in Britain. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
I'm sure that you were following the conversation between Etienne and I. Did you?
Yes, I was following, yes.
What is your reaction to some of the thing that he said about the fact that based on reporters on the ground and every sort of information one will look at, when it comes to an election, it is really very hard to call it an election because the political playing field seems to be not leveled. What is your reaction to that?
Right. My take from his comment, so his assertion, where he claims that the opposition is somewhat weak, is not able to compete with His Excellency the President, who is a political giant in Rwanda, if not in the region. That I agree, the opposition is not capable of competing with a strong leader like Kagame, who has provided enough to meet the needs of Rwandans. Remember this: Rwanda is, if you look at where Rwanda is from 1994 to where we are now, you will see that a strong leadership is what was needed. You will see that Rwandans see in Kagame is not only a visionary leader, but someone who attends to their everyday needs. When I say their everyday needs, what they class as important. So the opposition, everybody knows, is weak, but this is not the fault of RPF or the fault of President Kagame. It's not the job of President Kagame or the job of RPF to form or to train the opposition. It is the job of these opposition parties to organize themselves, to present their programs to the people. And if people realize that they have better to offer than RPF, I'm certain Rwandans will choose them. But currently, nobody is offering them anything anywhere near to what President Kagame and RPF have helped Rwanda to achieve. That is my take. So
It
seems to me that he's complaining that Kagame is strong, that RPF is strong. That to me it should not be a complaint. It should be, in fact, we should be asking these opposition parties, what do they, or these opposition politicians, what do they have to offer? They need to articulate clearly what they have to offer that Kagame has not given it so far, nothing so far they have shown.
Thank you very much. I hope that General Nyamwasa, you are listening to us. Are you?
Yes, I am, Shaka.
What about you? What is your reaction to what you just heard? After all, the last time I checked, you happen to be among the elite that say they liberated Rwanda in 1994.
Yeah, well, Shaka, that's true. But obviously, it's a travesty that what we set out to do is not what Rwanda is today. And I entirely agree with Etienne when he talks about lack of opposition in Rwanda. It's not because Rwandans would not be able to have opposition leaders. It's simply because the real opposition leaders are either being killed or they are in prison or have been forced into exile. So for that matter, you're not going to have leaders who are fabricated by Kagame, like Mpayimana, and you think you're going to have an election. Shaka, in Rwanda, what we are having today is not an election. We're not having elections in Rwanda. We are actually having a brutal and expensive coronation. Actually, beneath a coronation, because when you're going to coronate to have an emperor or a king, you only get him in the stadium, and then you have one day occasion, and then people go. But in Rwanda, it's brutal in the sense that people are being killed today, people are disappearing, people are being imprisoned, and the population is forced into stadiums and the meeting places. They start assembling in meeting places at midnight, and Kagame comes the next day at 2. Imagine if that was your mother. Imagine if that was your sister. Imagine if that one was your child. And some of those have children who have to go to school. Schools are closed. Some have got people who are in hospitals. They can't go see them because there is a riot. The second thing is you cannot talk about elections and free elections in a country whereby institutions of government are captured, extremely owned by one person. In a dictatorship, you don't talk about elections. You talk about a coronation of a dictator. The executive in Rwanda, that is the government, the executive, are actually treated as slaves. If some of you have followed President Kagame's retreats or meetings, he just harasses them, embarrasses them, humiliates them. And you know in Rwanda, it's the only one country where you are going to have a turnover of cabinet reshuffles, probably 3 cabinet reshuffles every year. So every member of cabinet expects to be expelled or be sacked any time. The judiciary in Rwanda is mainly dominated by the military. Very strong cases don't find their way into the formal judicial process. They find their way into the military, to the military courts. And therefore, in Rwanda, the judiciary is dominated by the military.
Now,
civil society organizations.
Now, General Kayumba, when someone, of course, is listening to you, someone might say, yes, you are capable of saying whatever you have said, because after all, it is to them, I think, they would say it could be political sour grapes, because you used to be an ally of Major General Paul Kagame. You used to be the chief of staff of the Rwandese army. You used to be Rwandese ambassador to India. But as we talk, of course, you live in exile in South Africa. I know that in addition to all those things, General Nyamwasa, you also have a training that qualifies you as a lawyer. You have a law degree from Makerere University in Kampala. What kind of incontrovertible evidence do you really have? I am talking about incontrovertible because it is supposed to be not liable to falter. What evidence do you have?
Absolutely. The evidence I have is that, you see, the very fact that I'm an exile and I'm not alone, hundreds of my colleagues, most of them who went to war, are either in prison or have died or are in exile, is a clear indication that I'm not telling lies. You know very well how many ministers that served in Kagame's government and in exile, prime ministers, including Twagiramungu, members of parliament, judges. So this is not sour grapes, Shaka. It is actually what is taking place. Look at the people who are in prison now in Rwanda, generals, Rusagara, Colonels Tom Byabagamba, Rujigana, and others. All those people are in prison. So there are no sour grapes. I'm talking about facts. But also when I talk about civil society organizations, Shaka, you don't find in Rwanda, for example, a civil society organization that can organize people to articulate their views. And therefore, when anybody says that Kagame is the only thing that can only happen to Rwanda, it's a matter of saying you are talking about development, you kill some and you develop some. That shouldn't be development, that you have to take people to prison, you have to have other people disappear, and then tomorrow we'll talk about having a very clean city. What matters, stability is what goes into people's minds.
Shaka, please allow me to come in here.
I think that your point is well taken. Go for it, Claude. Go for it.
Right. Okay. It seems to me that Mr. Nyamwasa is obviously is very angry, and he has an opportunity now to express his anger as usual, and he is only complaining about. The RPF is attacking President Kagame, but he's not looking at his own record and his own failures and his own issues. And for me, I would only say that when he talks about Rwanda being led by a dictatorship, he's in fact somehow insulting Rwandan people. Rwandan people are maturing enough in terms of politics. They know they have rejected this politics of tribalism, this politics of divisionism. What they want is politics that debates ideas, that debates projects, that debates the future, not simply looking at trivial stuff, trivial issues between individuals who may be fighting for self-glorification or self-gratification or fighting for power for themselves. And that is what Nyamwasa represents. And you've got to see where he is talking about people in prisons. You asked him a question, where is the evidence to suggest that those people are in prisons as a result of their political views or anything else, other than things that they have to account for? He's not providing you with any evidence, as usual. This is the failure of the so-called opposition. And let me remind you that RPF is not in government on its own. RPF is in government with 8 other political parties. They all have the constitution of Rwanda does not even allow the winner to take all. 50% cannot, RPF cannot have more than 50% in cabinet. So I really do not understand where he's getting, when he's making these statements, what is behind these statements other than trying to cover up for his own issues that he has to deal with and sort out? Because these are the facts.
I heard you, Claude, but you are talking about a President Kagame who actually gets in the neighborhood of 95%.
He's
of the
not
vote. Someone that probably
Chaka,
is only superseded by Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang Basongo, who used to get in the neighborhood of 97, 98.
Well,
how does he do it?
Let me tell you this. He can even get 100% as long as he gets it from the electorate, genuine electorate. No. Remember this. In France, in 1980s, what did Jacques Chirac get? Didn't he get 82-point-something%?
Right.
Were you crying, saying that is a dictatorship in France? Come on.
That is because people were running away from the ultra-right. But let me put this question to you also, Claude. Let's face it. We have heard, and I know Rwanda as well as you do. Not only do I know Rwanda, not only did I cover it, in fact, back in 1994, and even before, but I come from Kabale. I have people, I have friends, I have relatives all over the place. What about the fact that people are in fact saying that what we are seeing in Rwanda, in terms of the optics, Kagame addressing mammoth crowds, those are not really crowds that really are part of a campaign, that in fact we are looking at a military political operation here, not a campaign.
Absolutely.
When I say it's a campaign, you are asserting that it's a military parade. I don't understand how these old ladies are in a military campaign. Clearly, you can't, when you can't find something wrong with such effective campaign, you've got to understand that RPF is an effective organization, effective in terms of mobilization, effective in terms of delivering on their promises. That is why Rwandans are following what President Kagame is doing. Remember this, in 1994, there was no life in Rwanda. And Kayumba knows it, and you know it.
No.
You, Shaka, was covering the region. You know very well the region, I'm sure. And Kayumba was a part of the liberation movement, the RPF, when Rwanda was liberated. So he can't simply ignore the fact that Rwanda was resurrected.
Claude, the time is not our best ally. We'll come later. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Shaka. As you've discussed, Rwanda is preparing for its August 4th presidential election, and incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term. The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034 if he pursues it. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, how do you feel about Paul Kagame running for another term as president of Rwanda? Before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Rwanda election. If you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Now to our comment of the week from Facebook fan Nesler James in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, who writes, there are candidates from other parties, so it is up to the Rwandans to choose the person they believe can take them to the next level. It is very rare to find people of Paul Kagame's caliber in Africa. So let the Rwandans decide. The important thing is to have a transparent election. Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Marcus Lake Ascott, who writes, President Kagame is doing a great job. If Rwanda changes leaders now, you risk undoing everything he's achieved for that country. We need more leaders like Kagame in Africa. As long as you are working for your people and your country is developing, then I don't see why he shouldn't continue as president. And our last Facebook comment comes from Vincent Utuma in Nigeria, who has a difference of opinion. He says, why should he run for another term? Does he want to be president for life? Is Rwanda a monarchy? If it's a democracy, then it must be a democracy in spirit and truth. A democracy is not compatible with multiple terms. It can breed autocracy. Well, certainly no shortage of opinions here. A reminder that we appreciate all the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's streaming live. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or you can simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On
On the next, Straight Talk Africa. We'll preview the August 8th Kenyan presidential race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and former Kenyan Prime Minister Raila Odinga. The latest public opinion polls say the ballot is too close to call. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Indeed. Thanks a lot, Ayen, for bringing us some social media reaction from across the continent and across the African diaspora. Welcome back, and today we are talking about the upcoming Rwandan presidential elections. Our distinguished guests are Etienne Karechezi, Chief of VOA Central Africa Service, Claude Rutsinzi, former chairperson of the ruling Rwandese Patriotic Front in the United Kingdom, Lieutenant General Kayumba Nyamwasa, a former chief of staff of the Rwandese Army, and a former Rwandan ambassador to India. Well, I have to say, well, gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you so much, Saka.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Saka.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Saka. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Claude. Diane Shima Rwigara, the only female presidential aspirant who was disqualified by the Rwandan National Electoral Commission, had agreed to participate in today's show, but due to reasons beyond our control, we have not been able to access her. We should also note that we tried by telephone unsuccessfully to reach Charles Bunyaneza, the Executive Secretary of the National Electoral Commission of Rwanda. Well, Etienne, you've heard everything, and what is your reaction? You just had some social reaction by Ayen, and the other point, frankly, I want to raise also is that why would a lady like Diane be prevented from running for president in a country that in fact is lauded very much for being pro-women?
Good question, Ishaka Sari, and if most of Rwandan observers would ask the same questions, but if I may quote what I had with Diane Rwigara herself a few days ago, actually last week, she claims the possibility that she might have been a tough competitor to President Kagame if qualified to be a candidate. That's maybe, as she puts it, one reason why she was not allowed to compete with Kagame.
Why do you say she claims, not she says?
She says, exactly. Claiming and not saying, that's the same thing, basically. But again, if you argue that way, that what she says, but because she's not a candidate per se now, she's outside of this presidential competition.
Is it true that her father, her late father, Mr. Rwigara, used to be, along with people like Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa, very key financial contributors to the Rwandese Patriotic Front?
I believe, if I remember, one time when I discussed with Mrs. Rwigara, one time during my interview with her, yeah, she said that was the case, and Diane Rwigara herself says it, actually. So, but if you look at all these previous comments from our listeners, again, this is in line with what we hear from people on the ground, especially from the opposition supporters, who say it would be hard in order to compete, for instance, even though Diane may have been qualified to run, to compete with the rest of the group, it would be very hard because if you go into local districts, local administration, you find the same government official at local level doubling at the same time as representatives of the ruling party, which in some ways, as some of the candidates stressed last week, is one of the reasons why they can't attract people to their rallies.
Is that unique? Because let's face it, across most of Africa, there is no difference, no separation of the ruling party and the state. The two are fused. Is Rwanda not really an exception? You probably have less than 15 countries out of the 55 member countries of the African Union where you can actually have a legitimate process of a democratic election, like Kenya.
Good question, too, because when you talk to either some of these candidates or some of the critics on Rwandan politics, there is one report issued recently by Human Rights Watch which said there is a fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at this, either Rwanda, especially Rwanda situation, there is a fear factor that makes people not want to be involved into politics. Some people can even pretend not to know what's going on because of their own safety, you know. Some of these critics, especially the, if I remember, Frank Habineza, one of the candidates in the field, he was trying to go to meet the people in the one of the districts in the western province of Rwanda when he was supposed to have a meeting in one place. So the meeting was located to another place. And when you talk to people, you feel this kind of fear that if you attend the rally,
mm-hmm.
there may be some kind of consequences. It changed later on when the local administration, the higher hierarchy was informed about this case. Then the decision was made by the commission to let those people attend the rallies. Now the situation may have changed, but of course this fear factor is one prevailing reason sometimes why people are not willing to go behind another candidate.
So what you are really talking about is like someone saying, you're having circumstances here where an incumbent president is competing against people whose hands are tied behind their backs and their legs are tied together and they are being asked to counterpunch. And yet they can't really because they do not have the ability to do so.
And again, if you talk to Rwandans, especially the critics and the opposition, this is possibly one reason why there is no real transparency in what's being done sometimes that keeps the real political opponents outside the political field itself.
Very interesting. The reason why probably Claude's earlier point might be correct, that in fact Kagame has the ability to get 100% out of 100% vote.
That's likely again. But again, the question would be, would that be peaceful, as some other people can say, is it a question of transfer of power? Because if you recall, Shaka Sali, the referendum of December 2015 was calling people, actually people called for a referendum to keep President Kagame in power.
As which long was as only opposed by 10 people out
right.
of the entire population of Rwanda.
Right. Yeah, that's
very
right.
Very interesting, so, about 11 million. Let me go to General Kayumba. Now, Your former colleague, Paul Kagame, obviously is considered to be a very, very successful statesman. He's done very well, some say, at least his supporters say, in terms of service delivery and what have you. As you said, he has also done a lot of things that are not particularly, perhaps very appreciated by a lot of other people. But the image that you get is a unique leader who happens, frankly, to have developed Rwanda. Is it possible that this, in fact, is a lie, a big lie? I know that one great prime minister of Britain, especially during the Second World War, Winston Churchill, also who happened to be a great journalist, by the way, in his own right, once said that a lie can go halfway around the world, while the truth is still struggling to put on its pants. Is it possible that the truth, as far as Rwanda is concerned, is still struggling to put on its pants?
Absolutely, Shaka. If you look at what Human Rights Watch writes, when you look at the reports of Amnesty International, my colleague Claude, who's in London, must have read The Sun over the weekend. He must have read The Mail. All those are very plentiful, credible newspapers in Britain, and these are credible organizations. They have all showed you that the statistics in Rwanda are fake. People are dying. People are going to exile. There is famine and hunger. And what you see is actually a facade, a lot of propaganda. Shaka, in the presentation, Claude was talking about possibly that I'm an angry person. And I have reasons particularly to be angry. Because if you have never been in the RPF, if you don't know the cost that took the RPF to power, you cannot be angry because you don't know. those who know why the RPF went to power and why they went for the war, and there were so many people during the war, eventually there was a genocide. People have to be angry over the outcome. We were blaming Habyarimana for being in power for 20 years. Kagame wants to remain in power until 2034. That will be 34 years. So why did then the RPF go to war? If it was not, and at that time, it was also considered that Rwanda was very peaceful, and indeed there was no war in Rwanda. It was considered that Rwanda was developing, and by that time, indeed, Rwanda was developing more than maybe the neighboring countries. So that is not a measure of stability. And now when you have got a president who wants to be a vice president, he is stealing votes up to 95%. He is killing people with impunity. Why wouldn't you be angry if you've been part of that liberation struggle? My friend in London possibly has no reason to be angry because maybe he doesn't know the cost of what it took for Kagame to be in power. However, let me go back to the current elections in Rwanda. You know, Shaka, people who are listening to us are those who speak English, and I know they understand what goes on in North Korea. If you are in North Korea and they say the lead of North Korea will get 100%, you shouldn't be surprised. You can't be surprised. Number two, if you see people... Don't interrupt.
Let him finish his point, Claude. I'll come to you, please. Thank you.
Yes. You very well know that in Iraq, Saddam Hussein used to get the similar numbers, and it was considered that Iraq was developing. If you look at Tunisia, Ben Ali used to get 95%, and it was considered that Tunisia was developing. Should we have the similar situation? I think Rwandans deserve better. What Claude is talking about now is what they call the anthropology of raw expectations. It's an anthropology of raw expectations whereby you give people so little and you want them to thank you eternally. The very fact that you can build buildings and you are destroying other people's buildings. Kagame builds buildings, but he's destroying people's buildings where people have invested their money. Would you call that development? No. Is that fair?
I see.
That democracy?
I see.
And this was a dialogue, not a platform for Kayumba to make
statements. Just hold on, please. I'll come.
Reminding us what was written in the Daily Mail and so on. These are campaigns of his.
You'll get your moment. You'll get your moment, my brother. Just hold on. Let the general finish his point, please.
Okay.
So thank you, Shaka.
One minute, please. 1 minute and you complete your point, if you don't mind, General.
Absolutely, Shaka. And I think we should have discipline when somebody is talking, give him a chance to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And however, when I'm talking about all those things, it's not because they do not exist. And it's not only me who is talking about them. These things are in the public domain. We can choose to be blind and we don't look at them. But we all very well know how leaders who register 95%, 90%, and remain in power for too long, how they end.
Thank you.
And we don't want our people to end like that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, and then I'll go to London so that Claude will get an opportunity to react to what has just been said by General Nyamwasa. Let's talk to... Let's hear from Chris from Uganda. Good evening, Chris from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled, Shaka. Let me go to Karekezi. Will the international community be represented by election observers in both urban and rural areas? If the voters register clean from ghost voters, and the level of voting to be seen as free and fair, because observers tend to remain in the urban centers, so shall we see a big difference? Thank you very much, Shaka.
Thank you very much. He's talking really as if, in fact, the election and the playing field is essentially leveled. But I will probably respond to him that if in fact what we have heard is true, or even if in fact 50% of what we have heard and we hear is true, it reminds me of a one Joseph Stalin, the dictator at one time of what was then the Soviet Union, who used to say that when an election happens, and mind you, not everybody was a member of the Communist Party, but as far as he was concerned, really, the results were not reflections of those who came to vote, but rather a reflection of the people that had the responsibility to count the vote. Well, let me go to Frank from South Africa.
Thank you so much, Shaka.
You're most welcome, sir.
My comment, actually not a question.
You have a minute. Time is not our best ally. You have a minute, Frank.
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes, please.
Yes. My question to Claude is, does he know actually that the difference between a dictatorship and a democracy? Because if he would know the meaning of election, he wouldn't even have put up the argument that he says. When you're talking about elections, this is where you have electoral commission that is independent, that is able to allow all the participants an opportunity or the same opportunity. He keeps talking about the Rwandan people, but the whole world actually knows, and Claude knows, that the Rwandan people are hostages. That these are people who do not have an independent media, who do not have a justice system, who do not have any fundamental right actually to express themselves. And then he still claims that the Rwandan people are speaking. The Rwandan people don't speak. That's why you see that the president of Rwanda, Kagame, we're talking about to have done miracles. He has actually imprisoned his people to the extent that they do not have a voice. He claims that he has not had General Kayumba giving evidence. But it is on record, and other people hearing you have got it clear, that he talks about the people who are in prison, the opposition party leaders who are in prison, the opposition leaders who are not allowed to exercise their right to meet any media because there is none existing in Rwanda.
I'm afraid, Frank.
How can we even start to talk about elections which are just fictitious? We only see in Rwanda that we are wasting the Rwandan money.
I'm afraid, Frank, you have made your point. Let's go to Okolo from Nigeria. Good evening, Okolo. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka, our guest. My question is, I want to find out from our guest, election promises in Africa, the president-elect or the party finds it very, very difficult to deliver, and they will end up attacking the opposition parties. Why is this so in Africa? And I wish Rwandans free, fair, and transparent election. Good evening.
Thank you very much, Okolo. And the last question is from someone called Sweden/Rwanda. Good evening, Sweden/Rwanda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Oh, thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
I'm glad to greet you.
I'm
Pascal from Sweden.
Are you from Rwanda originally by any chance, or you are basically from
Sweden? I was there in 2013.
Uh-huh. Your question. You have 1 minute, Sweden, Rwanda.
Yeah, I know. Rwanda, it is clear that Rwanda is under the dictatorial regime, and there is no doubt that we are slaves in our own land. The question is, I can ask General Kayumba Nyamwasa, as a general, Rwandese are still looking for you as a great man and a general who can liberate them. My question is, what are you going to do for what you are seeing in Rwanda? We are still waiting for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go first to Claude. Claude, your reaction.
Right. Yeah, my reaction first to what Kayumba was talking about. He thought I was interrupting him, but my understanding was that we have 2 minutes to answer a question when he was taking longer. That's why I had to interject.
Thank you.
In any case, he goes on stating that he's angry because he knows the cost of that it took to liberate Rwanda. Of course.
You doubt that he doesn't know? He may not know?
Of course he knows. Of course he knows. And I know too. And I know the extent too. But the cost we all incurred may not be to the same level, but it costs us all. And we can all be angry when we see things are not working. But for me, I know that things are working. I know that Rwanda life expectancy is much higher than it was years ago. I know that poverty reduction is taking shape. I know that Rwandans are interested in education, are interested in healthcare, are interested in building a modern state, are interested in building infrastructure equipped for 21st century. They are not interested in listening to politicians or in politicking like Kayumba is doing so. You see, people like Kayumba, they think they can use some language that is going to confuse people. He's not the right person, in fact, to be speaking for Rwandans. Why? Because this man held high office in Rwanda for a very long time. Then, when it came to the issue of accountability, he decided to start campaigning to oust a government that was elected by the people of Rwanda. So he's not qualified really to be speaking here. In fact, he has some issues in even his own organization. But let me go on to the points he raised about the Daily Mail.
You have less than a minute, Claude.
These Daily Mail papers, they are known to be anti-foreign aid. So they are simply used by campaigners, even by people like Kayumba, just to give a bad image of Rwanda. Rwandans are clever now. They're mature now. They can see through his gimmicks, way of doing politics that is not really mature enough. They are not interested anymore in listening to talks like that. If really what he claims is to be true, Rwandans are able to stand up and correct them. I'm not saying that Rwanda is a democracy like, UK or US, but in US and UK, there are issues also.
Thank you.
A democracy is a working in progress. Rwanda, where it was 23 years ago, is not where it is today.
Thank you.
It's a working in progress. Where we are now is a choice we've made, and that choice can change also next whatever years. But as I was saying, he's the wrong person to be speaking for Rwandans.
Well, unfortunately, really, time happens not to be our best ally. I could give you 30 seconds, General, but can you really be disciplined? 30 seconds. You have the last word.
Sure, thank you. Well, thank you, sir, and thanks for everything, and thanks for hosting us. Well, obviously, it's not a duel between me and Claude, but all I can say, and in 30 seconds, is that Rwandans deserve better. They deserve better in terms of democratization. They deserve better in terms of security. They deserve better in terms of speaking out in the media. They deserve better in living in their country peacefully. Stability
on that note,
and development can only be measured when people are happy and they can be able to communicate easily. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome, sir. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Etienne Karechezi, Claude Rutsinzi, and Lieutenant General Ambassador Kayumba Nyamwasa. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Sebate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta Rwanda. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.